Welcome to BICOM's weekly podcast. I'm Neri Zilber, the new Senior Research Fellow at BICOM, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Eyal Zeiser, professor at Tel Aviv University, the doyen of Middle East Studies at the university, and the author of several books about contemporary politics in Lebanon and Syria. Eyal, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you for your time. Obviously, Lebanon and Syria are in the news, and the entire Levant really is in the news this past week. So I'd love to hear a little bit of historical background about how we got to this moment in time where Israel, earlier this week, reportedly struck in Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq, what we oftentimes call the Levant.
Well, you mentioned Syria, you mentioned Lebanon, you mentioned Iraq, you didn't mention Iran. And this is, I think, the big change, because till, let's say, 10 years ago, we were speaking mainly about Syria as the major actor, first under Hafez al-Assad, then under his son, who succeeded him, Bashar al-Assad. Syria was a strong state, an active actor here in the region, with a strong army that could deter and even threaten Israel with some sort of decree on Lebanese politics. But then the civil war in Syria started. Syria collapsed. Yes, Bashar survived, but mainly thanks to the Russian and the Iranian support. And this created a vacuum that had been created already before in Lebanon after the collapse of this war into the civil war of the 80s and the 90s, and after, and also the vacuum that was created in Iraq after the American invasion to this country in 2003. Mm-hmm. So we are speaking here about a vacuum that was used by Iran, and Iran is here, has control over, or some control, clearly presence in Syria, some presence in Lebanon through the Hezbollah organization, now seek to gain some presence in Iraq, all in order to deter, to threaten Israel, and this is now the big picture in our region.
So basically these are failed states that Iran is looking to enter, looking to extend its influence into, and this alarms Israel. Is that fair to say?
Yes. In Lebanon, there is the Lebanese government, Lebanese president, prime minister, but all know that Hezbollah is
the
main power there, with almost 100,000 missiles aimed at Israel. Now in Syria there is Bashar al-Assad, there are the Russians, but also Iran that seeks to establish presence, to deploy advanced missiles, to send an army of Shiite volunteers from all around the Middle East to have their bases, and now also Iraq. So this is what is war Israel, because there is no one that can stop Iran from establishing herself in this region and use it as an advanced post to threaten Israel.
So yesterday the Israeli military came out and essentially warned the Lebanese state directly that they would be held responsible for any Iranian or Hezbollah attempt to increase its military presence there, and also particularly the precision guided missile program. What kind of impact does that kind of warning, shall we say, have on the Lebanese government? Do you think they can actually act?
Well, I wouldn't build on the Lebanese and rely on the Lebanese government or the Lebanese army. They are there, have some important when we come to speak about the economy, cultural issues, but they can do very little against Hezbollah. But I think the announcement made by the military spokesperson had to do with, first of all, to warn Hezbollah and the Iranian themselves. I mean, they should know how, what are the intelligence abilities of Israel. Israel knows everything that is happening. This is something that they should take into consideration. And the other thing is well, we can see that they are not seeking a major war. It's not in the interest of Hezbollah, it's not in the interest of Iran to find themselves engaged in a major war with Israel. So we are speaking about small moves. The project or the big aim or goal are there, but we are speaking about very small moves, and Israel hope that by warning, and this is to say we know everything and we'll make a move, if you'll move, this can be
can escalate,
can avoid exactly avoid escalation and prevent the Iranians from those small moves one by one that eventually will lead them to their goal.
So nobody really wants a war. It's an interesting question what the conditions are currently inside Lebanon, right? So we've heard for a while now about an economic and financial crisis. Their rating has plummeted in terms of the international markets. We always hear about this trash crisis. They can't even collect trash on the streets of Beirut. Obviously, it's not 2006, but what else has changed in the past 13 years that either restrains Hezbollah or perhaps will push it maybe into a conflict in terms of the internal politics of Lebanon?
Well, Hezbollah is an interesting case because on the one end, it's an organization that was established, built by Iran, was equipped by Iran, but at the same time, this is a Lebanese organization. Many, maybe most of his supporters have nothing to do with Iran. They support Hezbollah because it does represent the Shiites in Lebanon. After all, it is a heterogeneous society, Shiites, Sunnis, Druze, and somebody has to work for the Shiites. This is the source of...
That's where it came from, its source of legitimacy.
That's right, and Hezbollah is worried, and Nasrallah said very clearly, I'm not interested in a war because my own supporters, the Shiites in Lebanon, will those who will be affected by such a war.
So he said this when?
He said it in 2006, after the war came to an end, and he said to his own supporters, I apologize. If I had known, would have known that this would be the reaction of Israel to the kidnapping of its soldier, I wouldn't have ordered the move. So clearly he's listening to his supporters who are not interested in a major war. Also, you know, he can gain nothing from such a war. So we are speaking here about very cautious moves by Hezbollah. Also, the Shiites in Lebanon want to be a part of a prosperous country and society. They are part of Lebanon, part of the Lebanese economy. Stability is important.
It's been quiet for 13 years.
It's quiet for 13 years. The economy, well, there are the American sanctions, and it's hurt Lebanon. And there is the civil war in Syria. It did affect Lebanon, so the situation there is not very stable economically, and nobody want to find itself engaged or dragged into a war. That's why his moves are very careful.
So this is actually maybe good news. So despite the events of last weekend and the threats we heard from Nasrallah in his very fiery speech, threatening a response to what he claimed was an Israeli attack in the Dahia neighborhood in southern Beirut, you're saying we can expect maybe a limited response?
Yes, but the problem in this region and the problem in Lebanon as well is there is still fire, and the way people in the Middle East react or behave, unlike Europe or the United States, is not to make statements, but also to make moves, to play with fire, hoping that eventually they will be able to control the level of the fire. That's the problem usually in the Middle East. So clearly Nasrallah feel that he need to set fire, hoping that, well, the Hezbollah attack will be limited, the Israeli response will be limited, but with such hopes we got ourselves into the 2006 war. Mm-hmm. That's what, he's not after a war, he's very careful, he's still in the bunker.
Right.
But at the same time, he has the military capability to cause major damage, to severe damage to Israel, and he can make a small move and by mistake cause a major war. That's what should be worry us.
So you've been observing Lebanon and Hezbollah and Nasrallah for quite some time. How do you expect them to respond? So you're saying they don't want a war, they want a, maybe a limited response. So what do you think that would actually look like?
Well, from...
and I know it's difficult to predict in the
past. Yes, but in the past 10 years, there were several cases where Hezbollah felt it needs to respond when there were Israeli attacks against Hezbollah men in Syria, on Syrian soil. So what they did was a limited attack along the border. I mean, this is to say, to try and set an ambush to an Israeli patrol, killing some of its personnel. They also refer to the Israeli flights over the Lebanese
airspace,
and they can try and take Israel by surprise by using anti-aircraft missiles if they have their air defense systems. If they have this kind of thing, I don't think that they will go after something big that will force Israel to go to war. They don't want it to happen.
So no missile fire on Israeli cities or targets. You don't see that.
I don't think see it happening. I mean, Hezbollah was very careful to go after military. Positions after military targets, so it's not logical, and still they have their own logic. They can make mistakes, but they still have their own logic. They know that targeting Israeli civilians without reason, without legitimacy, it will drag Lebanon into a war. It will be difficult for them to explain the results to their own constituency. So I think that's what might happen, a limited Hezbollah attack that can be contained by Israel and will wait for the next stage.
There's been a question for quite some time about Hezbollah's relationship with Iran. Some people say that it's a direct arm of Iran, and the Revolutionary Guards Quds Force, led by Qasem Soleimani, that basically Hezbollah is there for the Iranians' benefit. And that if Qasem Soleimani wants Hezbollah to act, Nasrallah will salute and take action. Do you believe that, or do you think the relationship is a bit more nuanced?
It's a dilemma I'm facing for many years. I don't have a clear answer because on the one hand, Iran is the one that gave them 100,000 missiles. Some of them are very advanced. You don't give somebody 100,000 missiles as a gift. I guess that this gift has to do with Iran's expectation that once Iran is big attack, Hezbollah will join the party. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, the Shiites in Lebanon will those who will pay the price, and without good reasons, I find it difficult for Nasrallah to drag Lebanon into a war. So this is a dilemma I think he is facing, and till now, I mean, he was very careful not to engage Hezbollah in a war with Israel because reasons that have nothing to do with Lebanon itself. Even during the Israeli major operations
in Gaza,
Hezbollah didn't respond and didn't engage in fighting with Israel, so it's still an open question.
But this time, according to Nasrallah, Lebanon was attacked. So he claims the rules of the game have changed.
Yes, that's right. And from his point of view, once he lets Israel to act freely on Lebanese soil, and according to the understanding reached in 2006. Either side shouldn't violate sovereignty or shouldn't attack the other side. I mean, Hezbollah was very careful not to attack Israel on Lebanese soil. Well, if he lets Israel act freely, well, the result will be that slowly, move by move, Israel will again attack
targets
military positions inside Lebanon, and this is something he cannot allow himself.
So he has to respond on,
yes,
on some level.
That's what he believes he should do.
In Syria, Israel has been striking inside the country now for a few years. Israeli officials, the prime minister, declares it openly. Do you believe at a certain point that the Assad regime will say, okay, enough enough being a battleground and a playground for all these other powers, we want to retain or retake control of our own country, obviously after this operation that they need to finish in Idlib, in the north. Do you believe the Assad regime at some point will push back against all these other foreign actors? Not only Israel, Russia and Iran as well.
Well, there are several questions. The first question had to do what would be next in Syria when Assad succeeded in eliminating, and he's not there yet. I mean, still most of Idlib province is under the control of pro-Turks rebels. The Americans have presence in almost quarter of Syria, in the northern part of the country, the Kurds area. So it's a long road to go, and for that he is still in desperate need for the Russians as well as for the Iranians. But then what will happen once he finished the job? And I guess first of all there will be a struggle for power between the Iranian and the Russian, a covert struggle. Doesn't need to fight openly on Syrian soil. He will try to maneuver. He needs the Russians for the international backup and for economic support. He needs the Iranian. He will try clearly to decrease the level of their presence there. As for Israel, when we look to the past, and not only to the last 5 or 10 years, but to the last almost 50 years since the end of the Yom Kippur War on the Golan Heights.
1973.
Well, actually in Syria it ended in May 74, several months later. The Syrian behavior is very clear, never to respond, always to contain. And I think they were smart in arguing that, well, we are not as strong as Israel. We can contain, absorb those attacks. They are very limited. So why to go to war? That's
right.
What they did after Israel attacked their military reactor. That's what they did many times when Israel attacked Syrian positions. Well, they will try to reach some understandings or create a better balance of power and balance of deterrence between them and Israel. But clearly, I don't see them. Be wrong, but I don't see them go to war or respond in a severe way to the Israeli attacks.
So if you're Prime Minister and Defense Minister Netanyahu and other security officials here in Israel, you're looking at what you just laid out. You're saying, okay, we can continue with our, what they call it, the campaign between wars. We can continue hitting Iran and its allies in Lebanon, Syria, and now in Iraq. And none of these actors really have an interest in responding forcefully.
Yes, but on the same time, you know, the situation here is very dynamic. The Syrian war is coming to an end. We have to look at the American behavior and what the Americans will do one day. Trump can pull out its forces from Syria. I think it's important that I know that Israel is already engaged in a dialogue with the Russians, with the American about the future. Israel hosted several months ago a summit of
the National Security Advisors.
Advisors of Russia and the United States, and this is was unprecedented. Some say it had to do with the support both Putin and Trump wanted to give Netanyahu before the previous election.
Right.
At the same time, you know, it was important. I think that eventually what Israel needs to do is to reach better understandings with Russia, with the United States about the Iranian presence, and through the Russians, maybe also with the Iranians. It's impossible to prevent the Iranians from having any sort of presence in Syria, but to define clear red lines. Well, in Lebanon it worked for almost 13 years, and by the way, Israel is the one that, you know, violated the so-called by attacking this target in Beirut, and Masada can always come and say, well, you know, I committed myself, or I promised not to attack Israel, I didn't promise not to establish any missiles factories in Beirut. So, you know, those understandings should be much better defined, but this should be the goal, because otherwise we will continue ourselves finding ourselves, or we'll continue attacking the Iranians. But we see there is a slow change in the Iranian position. For some years they didn't respond, and then they start attacking back. So this tendency, I think, will continue, and from time to time they will be better. So eventually they will be able to hit Israel as a response for the Israeli attacks in Iraq or in Syria. So it's not going to be easy.
Complicated times.
Yes, indeed. But interesting times at the same time.
Always in the Middle East. Professor, one last question. In the past, Israel oftentimes had very, very centralized, very strong authoritarian regimes all around it. And in the last few years, and especially after the outbreak of the Arab Spring, we've seen the opposite. State fragmentation, state collapse. In Israel's point of view, do they miss the good old days, where you had one address and one regime controlling a lot of this territory?
I would say yes, that the Israeli establishment in general prefer, you know, those good old, we have them, we have such regime in Egypt, we have such regime in Jordan.
And peace agreements.
And peace agreements. Hezbollah and Hamas and Bashar al-Attaf and dangerous enemies. At the same time, you know, with Hezbollah and Hamas, there is a clear address. So that's what Israel is up to in this region for the time being.
Always want a clear address.
Yes, that's right. A clear address that can be addressed, can be deterred.
Well, hopefully Israel doesn't have to go knocking on that address anytime soon. Professor, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.